Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Garment Decorators podcast hosted by Styles UK, the only single source supplier in the UK for custom heat transfers, heat presses, and of course, heat print education. Andy and I are very excited today because we've got a very special guest joining us. We have got Colin Sinclair with us. Now, you may or may not recognize Colin from his educational videos that he does in the print space, because there is a lot of content that you produce. Not only from your online print coach business, but you also have a print podcast yourself, the Printerviews podcast. So I'm very excited to dive into all of that and ask you a million questions that I have about it. But welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Anytime. So do you want to start off just by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself, a bit about what you do in the print space, in case somebody, I find it hard to believe they haven't, but just in case someone hasn't seen any of your content before.
Yeah, no worries at all. I'll give you the shortened version, but ultimately, so I've had two print companies over the years. First one was a print management company, and sadly, I lost that business in the recession of 2008. And what seemed like a really tough time back then is actually what's driven me to do what I do just now, because I've taken a lot of the lessons that I learned over that period. And try and kind of implement that so that I can help other companies not go through the same thing as I did back then. And then after that, I very much seen that it was moving online at that point, and decided to set up an online printing company. I'd actually just read a book by a chap called Michael Gerber. I don't know if you've heard of him at all. He wrote a book called The E-Myth. And it's all very loosely based around a kind of systems and process mindset, but kind of ultimately kind of talking about franchising and things. And at that point, I decided I was going to start an online print company, but also try and franchise it. So that led me on to go on to a thing called Angel's Den, which was like an offline kind of version of Dragon's Den, if you like. And we managed to get some funding, some investors came on board, and that allowed me to bring production in-house, and we did okay. Kind of, we got up to about 12 locations around the UK at one time. But around 2013, sadly, our family was hit with two deaths. Both my stepfather and my father-in-law passed away of cancer, and I kind of lost my mojo for print, if you like, for a couple of years. And around about that time, I knew a sales director up at Tradeprint in Dundee. They were at the time called Fairprint, and were being bought over by Simpress. And they kind of reached out and said, "Look, kind of, we could do with someone like you up here. Kind of, we know you're having a tough time just now. Why don't you let us kind of take care of all the kind of mundane day to day stuff, and you can come up here and be part of a bigger team." 2016-ish, I decided to go up there, which was tough, kind of going from being your own boss for so long to then working for someone else. It was a hard transition, but a really, really good experience. But around 2019, I kind of decided that I wanted to go back to being my own boss and making my own decisions, and left there very amicably. We still get a very good working relationship. But the seed had been planted in doing something around helping kind of other business owners and using the experience that you'd picked up over the years. So my wife had said, "Well, if you're going to do this, you have to do it properly. So go away, get trained up, become a proper certified corporate coach." And to this day, I think I'm certainly one of the only registered corporate coaches in the world who focuses specifically in the industry. And I think a lot of the reasons I do get clients working with me is because I've kind of been in the cold face, and I know what it's like to have a kind of print company. I've kind of walked in the shoes of the daily challenges and things. So it's a good niche to be working in. I've been asked numerous times to work with businesses out with the industry, but this is where I'm most comfortable, and I think this is where I can have the biggest impact. So that kind of brings me to what I do today.
That's quite a varied history you have in the industry. That's not what I was expecting you to say, if I'm being honest. But I think you're right. I think sometimes people, I mean, because obviously we focus a lot on education here to help printers, you know, start and grow their businesses. And we try and make it as specific as possible to certain niches and certain types of customers. But sometimes you do just need that one-on-one support.
I think that's the big thing. I mean, I've got one client in particular, and I'm sure he just uses me as a life kind of sounding board, once a month, a kind of therapist, if you like. But if that's what helps him, I mean, to be fair, like we actually sat last week and looked at the progress he's made over the last 2 years. I've been working with him, and he's come on leaps and bounds. And I think just having that support kind of mechanism, someone that knows the industry that you can bounce ideas off, kind of. I'm sure if my wife's watching this, she'll agree with me. But I used to come home in the evenings, and yeah, I wanted to kind of someone about what I'd experienced that day, and she would always say the complete what I wanted her to say. Rightly or wrongly, she works in a very different kind of space from print. She's a vet, so. She maybe didn't understand the kind of day-to-day challenges. So I think having someone that knows what you're going through can make a big difference. And I think it's important. I think everyone should have that in business.
I think I completely agree. And that's kind of one of the reasons that we wanted to start this podcast. So we wanted there to be somewhere online for people to hear from other people like yourself or the other businesses or people who are printers or decorators. They're going through the same things, but do want to talk about those things because that's what they're so passionate about. But, you know, it's all, you know, so people don't care about the mundane if they're not in the mundane, do they?
It's very true. I had a conversation with someone last week, and we were talking about kind of just like, if I go for a meal with my friends at the weekend or whatever, kind of, and I like to talk. I like to get to know what's going on in people's lives anyway. That's just part of what I do. But I feel as if I come away sometimes and I'm like, I've asked each and every one of them about what's going on in their life, how's their business, what's happening here. And I very seldom get it back. And I used to get annoyed about that. But actually, it's just because they don't have the same passion for what I do as likewise as I do for what they do as well. So I think it's important that you have, you know, that support group within the industry. And we're very lucky. Kind of there's a kind of, you see me on LinkedIn quite a lot, as many others. But there's a good support network out there. I think there's definitely been a shift since COVID, and I think people are more willing to have conversations and share ideas. And certainly, I've got a platform called Print Mastermind, and 3 or 4 years ago, I don't think it would have happened because people didn't want to speak to other printers because they seen them as a threat, they seen them as competitors. Whereas now they're happy to go on there, they're happy to share the suppliers, they're happy to share what they're paying for substrates, etc., because they're all benefiting from that. But I don't think that would have happened before COVID.
I agree. I think as well, because there is so much opportunity for everyone to be very busy and be very successful, that the more you support each other, the more you can all grow together. Learn more, maybe make some better efficiency improvements, or just, you know, maybe just enjoy yourselves because there's other people you can go and see. They might see Colin at events or popping by each time you're doing part of the coaching. But it's nice to have friendly faces because you're like, oh, this is a quite a fun industry to be part of. So that we should embrace that fact as well and, you know, enjoy being in this industry.
And also, as well, I think in terms of niches, there's more niches than people think, and there's a lot, like, in terms of, you said threats from one business to another, but I think people, once you get into this industry, realize how much opportunity there is and how many different markets you can sell into. And I think when you realize that, you're like, oh no, that's okay, I can be friends with the person that does sport and I do levers, like totally different markets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very true. I mean, certainly when I started this particular business, my background is small format kind of digital and litho print. And all of a sudden, kind of, I started being approached by signage companies or garment decorators. But actually, a lot of the challenges that they're all experiencing are very similar. So I can offer that support, albeit my knowledge might not be as fine-tuned in one area as it might be in the other. But everyone's going through the same stuff, and I think having that accountability goes a long way.
I think a lot of those, like I said, it's the same principles, you know, is it, it's what a lot of the time is like, what are you doing that you shouldn't be doing? It's kind of a simple version of the question, but now it comes down to things like process and efficiency. And a printer will, each print machine or each print type will work differently, but the actual mindset in terms of actually how you approach the problem, fixing it, is exactly the same, no matter what type of print is involved with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's getting, what I mentioned about that book earlier on, it's having the right systems and processes in place. And I think the one, I'll be honest, the one thing that terrifies me a lot, you know, is when I'm obviously working with a lot of companies at any one time, but when I start working with them, and I was the same when I had my business, because no one showed me I came from a sales background, you know, so no one ever showed me how to run a business. You know, you learned the hard way. There wasn't anything like this back then. There wasn't podcasts, there wasn't print coaches, etc. But you had to learn the hard way. And can I think, I've completely lost track of where I was going there. We can edit this bit out.
Well, I think for me, something that became apparent as I had a lot more of these conversations with our customers is that people don't always start from the beginning when it comes to printing. I find a lot of people, maybe they either started as an apprentice or in a junior role, and then they either, I'll just do this myself. Mm-hmm. I can use a heat press, or I can use a wide format. I'll buy one and I'll start doing it.
Yeah.
Or perhaps they, maybe they just bought a business. They knew someone was selling their business. They're like, embroidery machines, print, heat press. Yeah, I could do that. But they've not got any necessary business acumen to do it, or knowledge without the actual products. They just start doing stuff.
Yeah. It's interesting. You guys will probably know from all the guests you have on as well, but everyone always seems to fall into this industry. It's never been a kind of planned career path. They've like fallen into it in some capacity, or kind of knew someone who got them a job here, or they launched their own business because they were made redundant or things like that. So, but you know, going back to kind of where I lost my track there, having a blueprint to follow, kind of having, if someone else has made those mistakes, listen to the people that have been there before you, because they've all got different starting points as well. And I think that's when I speak to other print companies, they're comparing themselves against a company that's maybe been more established for like 5, 10, 15 years. Kind of course, they're going to be in a different place. You can't be, by all means, aspire to where they're at, but don't be disappointed if you're not at the same level as what they're at as well. And I see that a lot, to be sure.
Well, it's the same mistake they make on things like The Apprentice. Is when they submit their business plans and they're like, how much are you going to make in year one? Yeah, I'm going to make 2 million and it's going to be 1.5 million profit, because they've not really had to deal with, you know, the real world of business necessarily. I remember when we used to do business plans at university and you'd start like, yeah, I'm going to make loads of money doing this. This is a great idea. This course flow is going to be amazing. And then you start adding in this and it's like national insurance. I'm going to have business tax and all this. And you see like the graph going down, profit getting smaller and smaller and smaller. But unless you had some sort of training or mentorship to do that, there's so many things like, oh yeah, I didn't even think about that. You know, even tiny little things. Like I remember once I worked for quite a big finance company, one of my first jobs. And they did like a, you know, just doing a little study. We used to have 7 people around doing studies. And then they'd be like, get groups of different set parts of the company together. It might be connected. Say, what are you doing wrong? And at this point, it was a e-commerce platform, and I was a very junior role. It's my first job at university. Very much, you know, dog's body type stuff. And I would be in bank compliance. So someone would send in a form. I check it, and if it was right, I'd be like, "Yeah, brilliant. Scan it. Send it on to the next stage." If it's wrong, scan it, send it to the other stage. It's always be like, pick it up, scan it. Someone else prints it off after I've scanned it, looks at it. It's either right or wrong again, scans it, prints it off again, and so on. You're like, you realize that all the amount of time you spent scanning, all the amount of time you spent printing bits of paper.
Yeah.
Like, what happens if you just scan it once and everyone just reads it? And they were like, oh, yeah, that's a really good idea. And they realized they saved like 20,000 pounds a year just by not printing bits of paper and wasting someone's time on whatever it costs an hour to do that. But until you get into the detail, no one's there to tell you about that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things I love about kind of, I guess, when you start working with a new client is looking for those quick wins, looking for those things that can make the immediate impacts, like kind of processes that are being dragged out, kind of that costing them too much money. There was one client in particular about 2.5 years ago, and like within the first coaching session, we saved them £40,000, which was just ridiculous. But yeah, kind of it does worry me, the amount of companies out there that they're not running the businesses as they should. They could be a lot more efficient. And it's one of these things. Everyone says, oh, "I don't have time," but we always seem to manage to find time to help someone kind of work on the things that need to be worked on. But yeah, I must admit, it does terrify me because there's no support. We don't learn these things at school. We don't even learn how to manage personal finances very well at school, to be fair. But in a business capacity, I'd rather people got in touch with me before they were so far down the line and kind of up to their armpits in debt and things are out of control and things like that. Sadly, typically people tend to get in touch when they're at that stage. But yeah, there needs to be more support out there to show people how they should be, not just sales and marketing, but kind of finance and systems and processes, kind of the full gamut of what it takes to run a successful business. And I don't feel there's enough support out there. So having conversations like this definitely makes a massive difference.
Would you say that majority of the printers that come to you are starting their business? You say, I'd rather you come to me before you get so far down that line that we then have to go back and fix it all. Or do you also get companies that have been running for 3, 4, 5 years, maybe even longer, and they say, we just want to make some improvements, or we want to look into what we could be improving. We're hiring staff now. We want to make sure we're being really efficient. What would you say the ratio is from people that come to you looking for help?
Yeah, I would say probably 80% of the people that come to me are probably small businesses. So I would say anything up to 5 to 10 members of staff. Most of them are fairly well established. I tend to find that new businesses don't, because they have this kind of perception that coaching's too expensive or they don't need it and things like that. But I'd like to think that I'm relatively affordable and actually would justify the cost of what it takes to hire a coach fairly quickly. But there's that perception. And again, in the UK specifically, not so much in the States, because coaching's been around a lot more over there as well. But people don't like the concept of being told that they don't know everything, or they don't like admitting that they need help and support. And really, it's not about that. It's my job to challenge people and call them out and make them think twice about what they are doing. But ultimately, it's still their business. It's still their decisions at the end of the day as well. But I would say probably not so many in their infancy. Most people get in touch typically if they're struggling and they need help, or if they're looking to scale the business. So say they maybe, as you touched on there, and I think one of your previous episodes, was it Dave, the chap in the States, that was on just before Christmas time? And he was speaking just about setting realistic goals. Like, people come to me and say, right, I want to treble the business in the next 12 months. Well, that's not very realistic. That's not to say it can't be done, but certainly it's quite a challenge. It depends what level they're at as well. But quite often people will come to me and say, right, this is where we're at just now. In the next 5 years, we want to double the team. We want to bring in some new kit. We want to be in bigger premises, etc. And I'll help them kind of work out a plan about how they're going to do that. And we'll reverse engineer how we make that happen, and I'll keep them accountable in the process. But again, I've got clients. I've got some clients. One of my biggest clients, they own eight different print companies, and they've got about 200, 250 staff. So I would say the bulk of the clients I work with tend to be kind of up to a million turnover, anywhere between 100K and a million turnover, and then the rest are kind of there and above that. But again, sometimes it's being brought into, like you say, Molly, kind of look at the current systems and processes. I've got one client I'm working with just now. They don't want to grow. They don't want any more staff. They don't want to buy new kit. They just want to make little tweaks that makes the business slightly more profitable and run a bit smoother. So everyone's different, and that's what I like about it. So there's no 2 days the difference. It's always a fresh challenge.
I think that's a really important way to look at it, actually, because with social media now and everything that you see online about starting your own business and all of this, you know, be financially free, especially for people of, like, you know, the younger generation. There's a lot of content out there about the pressure of, I made X amount in a month, so could you. And I think that's brilliant. But sometimes starting your own business or starting a side hustle is just a bit of extra income. And some people don't want to work 24/7. Some people aren't interested in making millions. Some people just want to earn enough to comfortably live on, have a happy work-life balance, and that be that. And I think that's another way to look at it as well, but without the pressure of having to become the next Gymshark or the next Nike, or, you know, I think great. So many people have goals and that's fantastic, but there's definitely two sides to who wants to run a business and how they go about that.
Yeah. I've got a young guy I'm working with just now, actually. And I met him at Steinen Digital last year, year past 2023. And he's got a real niche. I won't mention what it is because everyone will be jumping on, but he's found a real niche marketplace. He was working, it's a bit of a side hustle, and he's built this online business up now. And he's literally acquiring 200 clients a month at the moment. With this particular product, he's absolutely flying, to the point that he started to reduce the hours on his main job and put that into the business. So there's different ways to look at it as well. It can be a side hustle, it can move into a main thing. And he started off with a relatively low buy-in, kind of bit of kit, just to kind of get started. And it's amazing what you can do if you find that kind of niche kind of business to kind of try and kind of work on.
So I'm kind of curious, Colin, that just thinking about your print coaching, is, without giving too much away,
you read my mind. I was going to ask the exact same question.
What if, so say I come up on your virtual door and we arrange a consultation, what's kind of a first question or two, couple of questions you would ask someone?
Okay.
I mean, when I ask you, I don't know all the
processes. Yeah, so typically I kind of have a questionnaire that I kind of send out to new clients that I'm onboarding, just to try and understand where they are in the business and how I can best support them. I would ask, you know, what the biggest successes the business have had so far, to kind of try and understand where they've had wins. I try and understand what challenges they're currently facing. And I think, you know, asking them how best they would like, what they would like to get out of coaching themselves, I think that's probably the most important one, because is that quite often can raise red flags if people aren't willing to have me challenge them to kind of give them alternative ways to look at things, then it just won't work. And thankfully it doesn't happen often, but there have been times where I've had that kind of discovery call with someone and it's just not been a good fit. It's not been, I don't think I can help them. I'm maybe not the right coach for them, and vice versa. You know, it's got to work both ways. But understanding where they're at in the business, you know, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and just try and get to know them as a person, because you're going to be spending a lot of time. Like, I've got one client just now, I think we worked out, we've had about 200 hours together now. So you spend a lot of time with these people, so you've got to kind of get to know them and be personable as well. It's hopefully a long-term relationship. Some coaching clients come on board and they're there for something specifically, and it's 3 or 6 months. But again, like, I've got some just now I've been working with from when I started three and a half years ago now. So we're in this for the long haul, hopefully.
And in terms of those that perhaps are, I don't want to say less successful, but those are less committed to coaching, perhaps, who might say drop out after a certain period of time, maybe things don't work out for them. Is there kind of a common mistake that people make around business or their approach to business that you see as a kind of indicator of failure, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to kind of get the early signs when things aren't working. And to be honest, you know, recently there's been two or three conversations I've had where the thing is, I do this because I want to make a difference. I want to help people get to where they want to be. And there has been, sadly, some times where I feel as if that's not going to happen because the person perhaps isn't committed enough anymore, or they've changed their mind about how they want to, you know, take things, or we just keep having the same repetitive conversations time and time again, and they're not moving forward. So there has been conversations, you know, where we've had to say, look, I don't think this relationship's working anymore. Can I maybe try this or try that? Or let's take a break and revisit in 3 or 6 months' time. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely indicators there. Like, even with that questionnaire I told you about, like, I can quite often tell by the responses I get in that questionnaire whether someone's going to put the effort in. Because if they give little one-word answers, rather than actually taking the time and effort to give me a decent response. Now, I appreciate there could be other reasons behind that. Kind of, I was recently involved in something which I can't talk about, I've just realised, but it was involved in seeing other people's kind of questionnaires for a side project. And I actually dismissed somebody because they hadn't taken a lot of effort to fill that paperwork in. And it turned out they actually had some learning difficulties and things like that. So you've got to take things like that into consideration as well. But most of the time, you can just tell by how someone responds to these things whether they're going to put the effort into their business. But yeah, a lot of the time, gut feeling as well. Kind of, because I've been in their shoes, I can quite often see the early warning signs that if things aren't kind of going to plan. And ultimately, I will challenge people on that. But again, it's on them. I can't do the work for them. I think that's been the hardest thing since I started doing this, is there have been instances where people expect you to do a lot of the work for them. And I'm not there to do that. I'm just there to guide them in the right direction. And ultimately, they know what they have to do. It's just me pulling the information from them and setting them on the right course to do that.
I think that's accountability, though, isn't it? I think if they, like you say, they know what they need to do, but they just need that extra push. And if they know they're speaking to you on a weekly or a monthly basis, however it works, then they think, oh, well, you know, we spoke about that last week and I haven't done it yet. I need to make sure I do that. Otherwise, you know, Colin might not be very happy with me. Or, you know, that they probably do find themselves holding themselves a bit more accountable.
Absolutely. And I do it with my coach. I get a coach, and I know fine well if I've not achieved the goals I set out between sessions with Hayley, I know she'll be on at me on the next session. So can I make sure I've got that stuff done. But I try and so I've got a kind of WhatsApp channel set up for all my coaching clients. So like if we say between sessions, right, this is what we're going to achieve between now and then, I will check in on them. I don't wait till the next session. Like, I will check in on them and just see how they're getting on. And sometimes it's just a little gentle nudge to kind of remind them, kind of, so they're not waiting till 10 o'clock the night before a coaching session before they start trying to do all the stuff. And then they don't do it properly because it's rushed. So it's not just about what happens in the sessions, it's about what happens in between as well.
So one thing I wanted to ask, and I probably should have asked since at the beginning of the podcast in case people stop listening, but I'm sure they won't, because you're a very interesting guy, Colin. But you mentioned the registered corporate coach, the RCC certification you have. And I want to kind of delve into that a little bit more, because obviously there's kind of a coach for everything these days. You know, you could get a £10 certificate and you're a coach for whatever. But you know, connect with Colin on LinkedIn, you'll see his background, you'll see what he's doing day to day. But could you, to anyone who might be perhaps a little skeptical about a print coach, or, you know, your background in particular, could you just tell a little bit more about what's involved in becoming a proper coach?
Yeah, I think the big thing for me, it was interesting because when I started the business, I didn't have the accreditation for maybe several months. A lot of the clients that I started with, I'd asked them, like, you know, does it bother you? And they'd all pretty much said, we're with you because of the experience you have. You know, we don't mind what credentials. But actually, the nudge from my wife, as I said earlier, but also what it's done is given me a structure to how I now manage the calls with the clients, and how what you kind of contract them at the start, because it's very easy just to hop on a call and very quickly lose your way. So kind of certainly one of the early things I do in any coaching call is what they call contracting. So it's understanding the things that the client wants to, you know, work with that specific day. Kind of obviously we'll summarize previous sessions and make sure we're still aligned towards the right goals. But certainly the coaching certification I have, we trained in a method called Torch. And what it, to be honest with you, most clients won't even notice that I'm actually using a particular coaching method on the sessions. But what it does is it just keeps me focused and makes sure that we get to a point where we've helped the client realize what they have to do between now and the next call. But also the conversation structured in such a way that it's not just me suggesting they do things. By the end of it, they're so bought into it that they're pumped and excited to go away and work in that particular thing. So for me, that was the biggest takeaway from actually going through the kind of certification process was giving me that structure to the sessions, rather than, because I was kind of winging it a little bit in the first several months because I was just using my experience, and it was probably more mentoring than coaching. And the difference here is the mentoring is more kind of pushing my opinion onto people, whereas the coaching is actually, as I touched on earlier, like, people know what they have to do. That just sometimes they need you to pull that information out of them and set them on the right course. And having that kind of structure has allowed me to do that.
So in terms of, the question I had in my mind was, obviously you can help in quite a lot of ways. Is there anything that you perhaps, not something within your, you know, remit or your skill set for coaching, that you see people making mistakes that you're like, I wish I could tell people to stop doing this. It's probably something to do with accountancy, or most likely, but is there anything like particular mistakes?
Just because I'm not an expert doesn't mean I wouldn't still speak up to them, to be fair. There's lots. And again, that's something I've realized a lot. So certainly, as I mentioned, we've got a training platform called Print Masterminds. And one of the things I've realized recently is I can't be the expert on everything. And I see people failing in sales, marketing, accountancy type stuff and things as well, kind of all aspects of the business. Because this is the thing, like, as I referred to earlier, like, when we come in to start a business, like, you're the sales director, you're the marketing director, you're the production director, you're the finance director. No one can wear all those hats. So I think it's important that you surround yourself with good people. And likewise with myself, with Print Masterminds, as you'll see on LinkedIn over the next few weeks, I've started bringing in some resident experts. So we're just taking on a new chap, Mark, who's our resident marketing expert, and he'll be helping. The good thing is I can see where people need the most help and support with. One of the biggest challenges just now is people don't like posting about themselves on social media for some reason. I find it quite easy because I like to talk about myself. But people don't know how to speak to their audience. So one of the videos we just dropped yesterday is all about kind of how to create content that's going to speak to the right audience, and even aspects of kind of using AI, how to do that as well. There's a lot of people out there abusing AI at the moment, and they're not using it properly. And that's one of the things I want to try and do. I want to try and educate the people that I'm working with. It's a fantastic resource, but you've got to use it properly as well. There's a lot of people out there just throwing stuff out and thinking people won't realize that they've not actually put their own personal brand voice into it. That's something I'm trying to change as well. And make sure customers are speaking to the right audience in the right language with products that are relatable to them as well. So I think a lot of people certainly come to me for marketing help and support, and whilst I've got lots of, I have actually got lots of marketing certifications as well, I don't class myself as an expert. So the chap I brought in, he's got 15 years of doing marketing training. He's got his own digital agency and things like that. So he's more qualified to deliver that training than I am. And likewise, we'll do the same for sales trainers, for finance experts coming in as well, kind of, because I think it's important to realize that you can't be everything to everyone.
I think that's smart. And you know, for anyone that's perhaps unfamiliar with Colin, I can tell you from personal experience of, you know, knowing him for probably only really about a year, I think, since we first met.
Yeah.
But we bump into each other at events quite a lot. And Colin is well connected and well liked within the industry. So his reach is far on beyond just himself in terms of who he can bring in to help you with and connect you with. It's a fantastic resource for you to have available as a coach, for sure.
Yeah. And it's not, to be honest, it's not just within the industry as well, Andy, because you guys won't know this, but in my past life, I actually ran a lot of big business exhibitions and networking events. So actually, kind of, Mark, who I brought in, was someone who used to be a member of my business club. So he wasn't actually from a kind of different industry. And likewise, I've got other people lined up that I've met in previous walks of life. So yeah, kind of, if I can help, I'll say to anyone kind of who's listening, kind of, but if there's a connection on my LinkedIn that I can help make introductions with, it's going to benefit your business, and don't hesitate to reach out.
Absolutely. So just on that point, if anyone is interested in working with yourself, Colin, how would they go about approaching you or getting involved with your online coaching platform?
Yeah. So obviously you can check me out on LinkedIn. Should be fairly easy to find. If you search for the Online Print Coach, I'll no doubt pop up quite easily. You can email Colin at theonlineprintcoach.com. But the website, theonlineprintcoach.com, has everything on there. There's sign-up links to the online training platform, Print Masterminds. You can book a discovery call for coaching. And yeah, by all means, kind of, the second best podcast in the industry, obviously, my one behind yours. But you can check out the latest episodes on there if you want to get. I think the podcasts are great because you guys will hear this, no doubt, as well. But it's just a good way for people to get to know you guys better as well. There's no hiding place when you do these things. And I think people buy from people. If they like you guys, then there's a high probability that they're going to want to work with you at some point.
To your point a minute ago about people getting their brand voice out there, I think it's either doing their own podcast or whatever it may be, is that we spoke earlier on as well about, you know, people not having other people to talk to about their business, because no one else wants to listen. But so many people that myself and Molly have spoken to, I know that it would be the same for you, Colin, have such interesting stories. You could listen, you could, like, you know, give you the long version of it, because they're fascinating. And well, if you put that story out there with your business, you know, you'd be one of those other clients, that person getting 200 clients a month coming in, because, you know, people do buy from people, but people love hearing people's stories. So you just gotta, if you go push yourself out there and start spreading a little bit more, but people do want to hear it.
They do. If I think it was episode 2 or 3 actually of my podcast, and with one of my clients on, a guy called Tom, and he inherited the family business, but there was so much history there. He's based in Somerset, and around the cathedral and things, and people that work. People that work there now, kind of, one of the guys lives in the house where the print company was initially launched and things like that. It was just steeped in history, and trying to get, again, it wasn't just him, it's many clients that they're very shy in coming forward and talking about their backstory and letting. It's one of the first things that I was talking to someone earlier about, having like an indoctrination kind of like welcome sequence to try and onboard new clients and by email. And like, one of the first things you should be doing is talking about why you do what you do. Let people get to know kind of what the business is all about. It's one of the first things that I'll work with clients on, is getting the right mission statement. Because if you can't get that right, everything else should revolve around that mission statement. But many times people put it off because it sounds a bit boring and they don't want to put the effort into it. But actually, it's something you should refer back to, and make sure that you're on track. When you make any decisions within the business, then it's in tow with what that kind of overall kind of brand mission kind of purpose is. So yeah, I've gone off track again, sorry.
That's okay. I mean, we kind of we've been talking for
the majority of our topics,
and I feel like this won't be the last podcast we do together anyway. So
we'll have enjoyed a little bit.
I guess one question I just had was: obviously, you've got an extensive background in the print industry, but how did you actually get started, and what was the first spark that brought you to the print industry?
So my stepfather, who I touched on earlier, who sadly passed away, he was from a reprographics background. And I think I'd been away, actually. I'd spent some time, I worked on a fishing boat in Norway when I was mid to late teens. My parents sent me there to get a bit more kind of worldly, I think, and get away from some of the bad crowd I'd been hanging around with back then. But it was one of the best things I'd done. But I came back from there, and I actually wanted to be a mechanical engineer. And for whatever reason, the timing of that, when the course started, didn't kind of tie in with when I got back. And somehow fell into the College of Building and Printing in Glasgow. Was actually 3 years into the HND, just short of 3 years, and one of the local printing companies came by looking for junior estimator and applications. And the course still had about 2 months to go, but the job started like the following week. So I basically left college with 2 weeks before finishing, and went for the job and got the job started the next day. So that kind of gave me my kind of introduction into print. But I started off as junior estimator in there. Within 6 months, I was promoted to senior estimator because the guy who was my boss left. And from there, moved into production. So I kind of already had a good overall kind of view of how the business ran. But at that time, I seen lots of sales guys driving around in big fancy cars and decided I want one of those. So I managed to kind of work my way into the sales team, and I kind of pretty much kind of went on in sales before I launched into my own business. So, but it was great because it gave me a good overall grounding, and I understood. I think coming in at the estimator level, it just helped me understand all the processes of kind of actually how the jobs were produced from start to finish. And then obviously I had a taste of that in production as well.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Colin. If anyone would like to go offline, Colin, look for the Online Print Coach. Look for the print reviews on, I think it's on pretty much all platforms for podcasts. Yep. So you get your podcasts. There's some fantastic episodes. I would encourage you to go back and listen to a real nice variety of different types of guests on there as well. And I would encourage you to go and find Colin on LinkedIn, connect with him, learn from him, and say hello to him if you see him at events, because he's often at quite a few of them as well.
Thanks so much, guys.
That's right. Anything else from your mind?
No, I just want to remind all of our listeners, firstly, thank you very much for listening. And secondly, don't forget to like and subscribe on whichever platform you are watching on. And we'll be back next week with another Garment Decorators podcast episode. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Colin.
Thank you.